Chapter 126. On the cause of this change in Edith, would obtrude themselves upon her mind and frighten her, but in the calm of its abandonment once more to silent grief and loneliness, it was not a curious mind. Florence had only to remember that her star of promise was clouded in the general gloom that hung upon the house, and to weep and be resigned. Thus living, in a dream wherein the overflowing love of her young heart expended itself on airy forms, and in a real world, where she had experienced little but the rolling back of that strong tide upon itself, Florence grew to be 17. Timid and retiring as her solitary life had made her, it had not embittered her sweet temper, or her earnest nature. A child in innocent simplicity, a woman in her modest self-reliance, and her deep intensity of feeling, both child and woman seemed at once expressed in her face and fragile delicacy of shape, and gracefully to mingle there, as if the spring should be unwilling to depart when summer came, and sought to blend the earlier beauties of the flowers with their bloom. But in her thrilling voice, in her calm eyes, sometimes in a sage ethereal light that seemed to rest upon her head, and always in a certain pensive air upon her beauty, there was an expression, such as had been seen in the dead boy, and the council in the servants' hall whispered so among themselves, and shook their heads, and ate and drank the more, in a closer bond of good fellowship. This observant body had plenty to say of Mr. and Mrs. Dombey, and of Mr. Carker, who appeared to be a mediator between them, and who came and went, as if he were trying to make peace, but never could. They all deplored the uncomfortable state of affairs, and all agreed that Mrs. Pipchin, whose unpopularity was not to be surpassed, had some hand in it. But, upon the whole, it was agreeable to have so good a subject for a rallying point, and they made a great deal of it, and enjoyed themselves very much. The general visitors who came to the house, and those among whom Mr. and Mrs. Dombey visited, thought it a pretty equal match, as to haughtiness, at all events, and thought nothing more about it. The young lady with the back did not appear for some time after Mrs. Skewton's death. Observing to some particular friends, with her usual engaging little scream, that she couldn't separate the family from a notion of tombstones, and horrors of that sort. But when she did come, she saw nothing wrong, except Mr. Dombey's wearing a bunch of gold seals to his watch, which shocked her very much, as an exploded superstition. This youthful fascinator considered a daughter-in-law objectionable in principle. Otherwise, she had nothing to say against Florence, but that she sadly wanted style which might mean back, perhaps. Many, who only came to the house on state occasions, hardly knew who Florence was, and said, "Going home, indeed, was that Miss Dombey, in the corner? Very pretty, but a little delicate, and thoughtful in appearance." ... nonetheless so, certainly, for her life of the last 6 months. Florence took her seat at the dinner table, on the day before the second anniversary of her father's marriage to Edith. Mrs. Skewton had been lying stricken with paralysis, when the first came round, with an uneasiness, amounting to dread. She had no other warrant for it, than the occasion, the expression of her father's face, in the hasty glance she caught of it, and the presence of Mr. Carker, which, always unpleasant to her, was more so on this day than she had ever felt it before. Edith was richly dressed, for she and Mr. Dombey were engaged in the evening to some large assembly, and the dinner hour that day was late. She did not appear until they were seated at table, when Mr. Carker rose, and led her to her chair. Beautiful and lustrous as she was, there was that in her face and air which seemed to separate her hopelessly from Florence, and from everyone, forevermore. And yet, for an instant, Florence saw a beam of kindness in her eyes, when they were turned on her, that made the distance to which she had withdrawn herself a greater cause of sorrow and regret than ever. There was very little said at dinner. Florence heard her father speak to Mr. Carker sometimes on business matters, and heard him softly reply, but she paid little attention to what they said, and only wished the dinner at an end. When the dessert was placed upon the table, and they were left alone, with no servant in attendance, Mr. Dombey, who had been several times clearing his throat in a manner that augured no good, said, "Mrs. Dombey, you know, I suppose, that I have instructed the housekeeper that there will be some company to dinner here tomorrow." "I do not dine at home," apostrophe she answered. "Not a large party," apostrophe pursued Mr. Dombey, with an indifferent assumption of not having heard her, "merely some 12 or 14. My sister, Major Bagstock, and some others whom you know but slightly." Apostrophe, "I do not dine at home," apostrophe she repeated. "However doubtful reason I may have, Mrs. Dombey," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, still going majestically on, as if she had not spoken, "to hold the occasion in very pleasant remembrance just now, there are appearances in these things which must be maintained before the world. If you have no respect for yourself, Mrs. Dombey," apostrophe, "I have none," apostrophe she said. "Madam," apostrophe cried Mr. Dombey, striking his hand upon the table, "hear me if you please. I say, if you have no respect for yourself," apostrophe, "and I say I have none," apostrophe she answered. He looked at her, but the face she showed him in return would not have changed, if death itself had looked. "Carker," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, turning more quietly to that gentleman, "as you have been my medium of communication with Mrs. Dombey on former occasions, and as I choose to preserve the decencies of life, so far as I am individually concerned, I will trouble you to have the goodness to inform Mrs. Dombey that if she has no respect for herself, I have some respect for myself, and therefore insist on my arrangements for tomorrow." "Tell your sovereign master, sir," apostrophe said Edith, "that I will take leave to speak to him on this subject by and by, and that I will speak to him alone." "Apostrophe, Mr. Carker, madam," apostrophe said her husband, "being in possession of the reason which obliges me to refuse you that privilege, shall be absolved from the delivery of any such message." Apostrophe, he saw her eyes move while he spoke, and followed them with his own. "Your daughter is present, sir," apostrophe said Edith. "My daughter will remain present," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey. Florence, who had risen, sat down again, hiding her face in her hands, and trembling. "My daughter, madam," began Mr. Dombey. But Edith stopped him, in a voice which, although not raised in the least, was so clear, emphatic, and distinct, that it might have been heard in a whirlwind. "I tell you I will speak to you alone," apostrophe she said. "If you are not mad, heed what I say." "Apostrophe, I have authority to speak to you, madam," apostrophe returned her husband, "when and where I please, and it is my pleasure to speak here and now." Apostrophe, she rose up, as if to leave the room, but sat down again, and looking at him with all outward composure, said, in the same voice, "You shall." "Apostrophe, apostrophe, I must tell you first that there is a threatening appearance in your manner, madam," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, "which does not become you." She laughed. The shaken diamonds in her hair started and trembled. "There are fables of precious stones that would turn pale, their wearer being in danger. Had these been such, their imprisoned rays of light would have taken flight that moment, and they would have been as dull as lead." Carker listened, with his eyes cast down. "As to my daughter, madam," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, resuming the thread of his discourse, "it is by no means inconsistent with her duty to me that she should know what conduct to avoid. At present you are a very strong example to her of this kind, and I hope she may profit by it." "Apostrophe, I would not stop you now," apostrophe returned his wife, immovable in eye, and voice, and attitude. "I would not rise and go away, and save you the utterance of one word, if the room were burning." Apostrophe, Mr. Dombey moved his head, as if in a sarcastic acknowledgement of the attention, and resumed, but not with so much self-possession as before, For Edith's quick uneasiness in reference to Florence, and Edith's indifference to him and his censure, chafed and galled him like a stiffening wound. Mrs. Domney, apostrophe said he, it may not be inconsistent with my daughter's improvement, to know how very much to be lamented, and how necessary to be corrected, a stubborn disposition is, especially when it is indulged in unthankfully indulged in, I will add after the gratification of ambition and interest. Both of which, I believe, had some share in inducing you to occupy your present station at this board. Apostrophe, no. I would not rise, and go away, and save you the utterance of one word, apostrophe she repeated, exactly as before, if the room were burning. Apostrophe, it may be natural enough, Mrs. Domney, apostrophe he pursued, that you should be uneasy in the presence of any auditors of these disagreeable truths, though why he could not hide his real feeling here, or keep his eyes from glancing gloomily at Florence, why anyone can give them greater force and point than myself, whom they so nearly concern, I do not pretend to understand. It may be natural enough, that you should object to hear, in anybody's presence, that there is a rebellious principle within you which you cannot curb too soon, which you must curb, Mrs. Domney, and which, I regret to say, I remember to have seen manifested with some doubt and displeasure, on more than one occasion before our marriage towards your deceased mother. But you have the remedy in your own hands. I by no means forgot, when I began, that my daughter was present, Mrs. Domney. I beg you will not forget, tomorrow, that there are several persons present, and that, with some regard to appearances, you will receive your company in a becoming manner. So it is not enough, apostrophe said Edith, that you know what has passed between yourself and me. It is not enough, that you can look here, apostrophe pointing at Carker, who still listened, with his eyes cast down, and be reminded of the affronts you have put upon me. It is not enough, that you can look here, apostrophe pointing to Florence with a hand, that slightly trembled for the first and only time, and think of what you have done, and of the ingenious agony, daily, hourly, constant, you have made me feel in doing it. It is not enough that this day, of all others in the year, is memorable to me for a struggle well deserved, but not conceivable by such as you, in which I wish I had died. You add to all this, do you, the last crowning meanness of making her a witness of the depth to which I have fallen, when you know that you have made me sacrifice to her peace, the only gentle feeling and interest of my life, when you know that for her sake, I would now, if I could, but I cannot, my soul recoils from you too much submit myself wholly to your will, and be the meekest vassal that you have. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this was not the way, to minister to Mr. Domney's greatness. The old feeling was roused by what she said, into a stronger and fiercer existence than it had ever had. Again, his neglected child, at this rough passage of his life, put forth by even this rebellious woman, as powerful where he was powerless, and everything where he was nothing. He turned on Florence, as if it were she who had spoken, and bade her leave the room. Florence with her covered face obeyed, trembling and weeping as she went. I understand, madam, apostrophe said Mr. Domney, with an angry flush of triumph, the spirit of opposition, that turned your affections in that channel, but they have been met, Mrs. Domney, they have been met, and turned back. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the worse for you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she answered, with her voice and manner still unchanged. A. Apostrophe, for he turned sharply when she said so, what is the worst for me, is 20,000,000 times the worst for you. Heed that, if you heed nothing else. Apostrophe, the arch of diamonds spanning her dark hair, flashed and glittered like a starry bridge. There was no warning in them, or they would have turned as dull, and dim as tarnished honor. Carker still sat and listened, with his eyes cast down. Mrs. Domney, apostrophe said Mr. Domney, resuming as much as he could of his arrogant composure, you will not conciliate me, or turn me from any purpose, by this course of conduct. Apostrophe, it is the only true, although it is a faint expression of what is within me, apostrophe she replied. But if I thought it would conciliate you, I would repress it, if it were repressible by any human effort. I will do nothing that you ask. Apostrophe, I am not accustomed to ask, Mrs. Domney, apostrophe, he observed. I direct. Apostrophe, I will hold no place in your house tomorrow, or on any recurrence of tomorrow. I will be exhibited to no one, as the refractory slave you purchased, such a time. If I kept my marriage day, I would keep it as a day of shame. Self-respect. Appearances before the world. What are these to me? You have done all you can to make them nothing to me, and they are nothing. Apostrophe, Carker, apostrophe, said Mr. Domney, speaking with knitted brows, and after a moment's consideration, Mrs. Domney is so forgetful of herself and me in all this, and places me in a position so unsuited to my character, that I must bring this state of matters to a close. Apostrophe, release me then, apostrophe, said Edith, immovable in voice, in look, and bearing, as she had been throughout, apostrophe, from the chain by which I am bound. Let me go. Apostrophe, madam? Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mr. Domney. Loose me. Set me free. Apostrophe, madam? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he repeated. Mrs. Domney? Apostrophe, tell him, apostrophe, said Edith, addressing her proud face to Carker, that I wish for a separation between us, that there had better be one. That I recommend it to him, tell him it may take place on his own terms, his wealth is nothing to me, but that it cannot be too soon. Apostrophe, good heaven, Mrs. Domney. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said her husband, with supreme amazement, do you imagine it possible that I could ever listen to such a proposition? Do you know who I am, madam? Do you know what I represent? Did you ever hear of Domney and Son? People to say that Mr. Domney, was separated from his wife. Common people to talk of Mr. Domney and his domestic affairs. Do you seriously think, Mrs. Domney, that I would permit my name to be bandied about in such connection? Pooh, pooh, madam. Fie for shame. You're absurd. Apostrophe, Mr. Domney absolutely laughed. But not as she did. She had better have been dead than laugh as she did, in reply, with her intent look fixed upon him. He had better have been dead than sitting there, in his magnificence, to hear her. No, Mrs. Domney, apostrophe, he resumed. No, madam. There is no possibility of separation between you and me, and therefore I the more advise you to be awakened to a sense of duty. And, Carker, as I was about to say, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.